Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. You can find his books at Next Chapter Books. Hey, still time to get his one for Father's Day. That's coming up this weekend. Make sure you stop by for that. Also, totallyiowa.com, the Iowa Business Reports, the daily show he does down in Iowa. Very good stuff. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes from us from KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff is stationed. Hey, Jeff.
That song just keeps going. I didn't realize it just kept going and going and going. It's tremendous.
It is. It goes on like Joe Biden going after Steve Ducey at a press conference.
I apologize.
Oh, that was a loaded – boy, was that a loaded question from Ducey.
Yes, but I'm now reading. The email just came through from the White House. This is the transcription of the president at the airport. I owe my last question an apology. I shouldn't have been such a wise guy.
No, that was not him. He was right before that. That was a CNN person who, when she asked about, you know, how are you going to get him to compromise? No, he didn't apologize for Ducey. He didn't apologize for Ducey.
I just like the fact, how do you like the fact that your president, who hands out aviator sunglasses to foreign leaders, then says, yeah, I was being a wise guy. I don't know. I liked it. I don't know.
Let's look at that. Let's go. We're going to spend some time here, and actually we're going to get into, I mean, it's a little wonky, but European trade, but it's a big impact issue because, let's face it, you know, the tone here at the G7, I mean, there were six other people up there with Joe Biden who were clearly very happy to be up there with Joe Biden. There was one guy today who clearly was not happy to be up there with Joe Biden. The tone clearly has changed. And especially, let's start with the European leaders, the G7, or the world leaders, G7 leaders. The idea that the, you know, I think they're clearly, from the rest of the world's perspective, I'm glad we're dealing with Joe Biden. Now, that came across very clear.
It did, and it's not political.
No.
It is because, because some
Well, partially, a little bit, but no, you're right. It's mostly not because, and I'll get to that in a second, but go ahead, please.
Yeah, the Biden critics, we're on the same page here. The Biden critics are going to say, well, that's because he's so soft on. No, it has to do with decorum. It has to do with protocol. It has to do with what they're used to. And if you'll recall, during one of these meetings, they were going to do the family portrait kind of thing, and Trump literally elbowed two people out of the way to get in the front row. You remember that?
Yeah, well, I do.
And yes, this was socially distant. But, I mean, the idea is somebody was going to break the rules because that was his thing, and Biden fits what they're used to. And so from that perspective, very clearly, they're glad to have that guy. And you could tell in the interactions afterwards. I am curious, and I'd be interested in your thoughts. So far, they said there was no joint news conference between Putin and Biden after the summit. And I kept hearing people saying that that was Biden's idea or the U.S.'s idea. And, of course, those in the right are saying, well, he doesn't want to be seen next to Putin because he can't measure up. I think it was probably Putin's idea, and Putin went first and then got out of Dodge before Biden spoke.
I think because Putin – all right, Putin's an evil dictator, but he's politically leader. As a political leader, he knows against Trump he looks very superior. Against Biden, who has no problem smacking back on him, that's the last thing he wants, is to be in a press conference and all of a sudden have Biden smack him back. Plus the fact that, you know – I think from Biden's perspective, why give the guy more validity than he already has? And I can see why the White House might have said, you know, we're going to kibosh this idea because, you know what? No, we're meeting with him. That's the validity he gets. He doesn't need us to do the dog and pony show at the press conference.
And again, you've got Putin. I mean, look what he did. And this, in one analysis I saw, they said it's typical Putin when he's asked questions about Russian atrocities. He doesn't answer that. He says, well, what about your country? What about this? What about that? And he could not do that with the president of the United States at the other podium to fact check him.
And he knows it would have been a disaster for him. And, you know, as opposed to Trump saying, is this a soccer ball? You know, it's kind of one of those things where you have to be politically savvy enough to get off the stage if you know I'm about to get upstaged. And that was it. And Biden, you know, he does have his gaffes. And by the way, if you didn't see the Dana Carvey impression of him, which is so perfect that they did on Colbert, it's absolutely spot on. He does his gaffes. He has his quirks. But the reality is the guy does not back down. And that's not something that Putin likes. I want to get back to the G7, though. Because yeah, when we get back to that foreign trade, because there is a – Biden has walked into a golden opportunity. Brexit was a nightmare for Britain. That was one of the – I don't know how much you've read about it, but the negotiations from the British side were nightmarish. Everything they did seemed to actually hurt their trade markets far worse than tried to help them. They are frantically in try-to-recoup mode. So you've got England, obviously, looking to renew their trade agreements with their old ally, the United States. You got the rest of the G7 and the rest of the EU, as a matter of fact, as well, saying, hey, America's back. We love a good, powerful America. Might not be as desperate as Britain, but still, they like that America. And on the same side, you got Biden coming in after Trump put a lot of these tariffs in. And I was reading a little bit about the whiskey tariffs. And, you know, the same people that when Trump was putting them in there saying, yes, this is going to kill our business, but we support Trump, are now like, why aren't these being rescinded? So you have – Biden has been given a real golden opportunity. You know, in ag – you got, of course, Iowa with the ag sector, the industrial Midwest, all, you know, all these auxiliary things, cranberries, you know, whiskey. You got tech issues from California. He has the ability to lift these tariffs, get really good trade. I mean, they're desperate, especially Britain. They're desperate for trade deals. He is in a power position. It really is a bit of a gift because not because of necessarily anything he's done, but by what Trump did and by what Brexit did, he has a real opportunity on the world stage to help the United States with some serious positive trade agreements.
In light of the COVID pandemic on top of it.
Yes, exactly.
It's a perfect storm in that respect. Old Boris there from Great Britain, you know, his whole thing going into the whole into all of this is we can do better alone and we'll do all these bilateral agreements. And by gosh, we're going to be great. And the Trump administration played along in the very early days with a couple of these agreements. And, you know, it's as you say, they're hurting now. And so the whole deck has been shuffled because of COVID and how some of these nations are still in the throes of lockdowns, et cetera. And so you've got the United States has the opportunity to not only come out with a gloved hand and offer some friendship, but also be able to help our own people who have not recovered uniformly, clearly, from the economic impact of the pandemic. So there's an opportunity here that I don't know is served by people saying in questions, hey, how come you're not going to knock down those tariffs? You said you were going to do it. It's like, hey, can't undo everything in one day.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it takes some time. And I will say this. You and I have done these conversations through the phone, through Skype, through whatever magic and voodoo. The last time you and I did a radio program in the same studio was at least 10, if not 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't at this radio station. So I'm just – and so there's a point to be made. And that is we have pretty good conversations because we do this every week. But there's nothing – and we've all learned this – Zoom and Skype does not replace being across the table from someone. And so for this G7, there didn't need to be anything that came out of it. And in particular, the bilateral meeting between Putin and Biden, nothing needed to come of it other than an introduction, a conversation across the table, look them in the eye, size them up, and just open the door. And that's one of the things that President Biden said. Look, there was a lot of hype about this meeting, you know, Biden and Putin. Really, they just needed to establish the relationship. Nothing needed to come of it. Nothing was ever going to come of it. And neither one came away. Well, as Biden said, I did what I came here to do.
Yeah.
And there is nothing to replace. Across the table, look him in the eye, etc. And so he was able to do that. And then the hard work now begins as you try to build upon that with the second-tier officials who do all of the real serious negotiating.
And that's how governments work. Two other observations I wanted to make about this. First of all, you remember how we were talking, and I'll get back to Putin here in a second, but the difference between how Putin reacted to Trump and Biden, how different he looked. I want to look at Boris Johnson, because Boris Johnson, when Trump was in there, he looked like a passable leader. With Biden there, Boris Johnson looks like a freaking intern. And the rest of the G7, it was like, okay, who's this guy? I mean, it was so – the worst thing I think that can happen to Boris Johnson is Trump off the world stage, because now whereas the rest of the G7 look like Biden, negotiators, we're going to set this up. We agree. Great. Here's our people. There's your people. Let's work this out. Here's Boris Johnson. Like, yeah, my wife's pretty too. You know, like, oh, my God. He really does – He needed Trump to look more legitimate, and with Biden there, he does look like a second tier world leader. And that, once again, it plays in Biden's hands, because once again, England's a good trade partner. They need us, we need them. Great, we can work with them, and we can take advantage of some things. But at the same time, it is stark how Boris Johnson, how bad he looked now.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for jumping in, but I mean, didn't Boris Johnson come to power in the shadow of Trump?
Yes.
I mean, in essence, he looked like Trump, the whole bit. Okay, well, now there's no comparison, to your point. Now he's just the weird guy who, oh, you're hosting this? Oh, okay. Well, can you get me another canopy? Oh, you're not serving people. You're actually paying for it. Okay. The rumpled outsider look. He's got that down, but I'm not sure this is that time now.
And especially with all the trade things that are blowing up over there. Yeah. One of the other things, too, and I love how you said it, where the fact is, okay, we're just establishing protocol. We're back. You're G7, clearly. Hey, buddies, good to see you again from Biden. That's another thing I think that really was for Putin was tough, is that he had done so well at undermining what was thought to be unbreakable bonds between the U.S. and the rest of the world. And Biden just in this one very quick meeting said, nope, we're back with them. You guys are, we trust you, in the way he does it in the political way. We trust you, you're Russia, we respect you, but these are our allies. I'll say hi to you and we're out the door. I think one of the things that really came off for Putin is that his window to take advantage of this is over. And any advantages he got, which he did, I mean, he definitely got some advantages under Trump in regards, especially foreign policy and some allies and allegiances, especially in the Middle East. But the reality is that the establishment has been remade. We're with the G7. We're with the EU. We're with England. We're with our Pacific trade partners as well, and the South American trade partners. And we're not, Russia is no longer getting top billing here. And I think that established a lot right there as well. Your thoughts?
I don't like the phrase America is back, because America never left.
True.
It's a different way of doing it. And I'm not trying to be harsh on you, but I mean, Biden has said that a lot. America's back. Well, his approach to America is back. His policies are back. Okay,
well, but I mean, make America great again, too. I mean, it's like you can, it's I can understand what you're saying in regards to America's back. But I mean, to a point. Reagan did it. I mean, Obama did it. I mean, you create an image and you push that image. I mean, and that is part of America, is making people there. And America is back. It's a good one to go with, especially when everyone at the G7 is like, you're back.
when they're grabbing at your ankle, yes, saying, thank God you're back. Yeah, I know that is an awkward image. Luckily, that wasn't photographed. But no, I mean, but to the broader point, what he's doing is saying, this is my view of the world, and I believe in protocol, and I don't believe in blowing everything up, and I got 50 years of experience to support what it is that I do, and that's what those other folks are going to be much more comfortable with. I was confused about one thing.
Yeah.
And this is why when he was over there, they being the White House, released the plan to combat domestic terrorism. I'm not sure why they did it when they did it. It seems to me that it could have undercut what was going on there. You could have waited to roll that out until he came back. I don't know how it helped us there. In other words, by rolling out the new U.S. plan to combat domestic terrorism, how does that help him in negotiating with these folks? And again, I say this only because for a White House that has been so on message, I'm not saying I agree with the message, I'm just simply saying they have been very much focused on message. That had a little hiccup that I did not quite understand, because it had the potential to be taking away from him. Now, my email comes in with everything from the White House. Okay, I get the here's the everything that comes from the White House press office.
Strawberry ice cream day, stuff like that. Yeah, you get everything. Yeah.
Strawberry ice cream.
Hey, I'm not against it. I'm all for it, man.
Sprinkles, by gosh, or you're not doing it right. So I'm saying that, you know, yes, I do see a lot of it, and anybody who's on the mailing list, I'm not special. I'm just saying I see a lot of it, and so it seemed out of context. I'm not sure to the broad consumers they picked up on it. It just seemed like an odd thing. Because I thought the focus really ought to be, because they made sure that the vice president was back in Washington and wasn't doing anything that would detract. And so I thought this was a little odd that they did that, but maybe they were, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that.
I've got a theory.
Rare change.
I got a theory on this, and I don't think it has anything to do with EU. It has to do with going on. As a matter of fact, when we come on back, I want to talk a little bit about what is clearly a ramping up of a motivation by the Democrats in the House and the Senate to say, okay, enough, enough. We're looking at 1-6 and we're going to do a thorough investigation. We'll take a break. Come on back. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205. And I do want to make one quick little plea. If you do need a Father's Day gift, go to Next Chapter Books. Get one of his books. They are a very good book. They'll make a nice little Father's Day gift. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein is joining us. Jeff, I want to get into what you said about the domestic terrorist report, basically saying that these right-wing terrorist groups are not done and they are going to strike back and you better be prepared for it. We put this in conjunction, though, with a lot of other news that's coming out. And whether it's 21 Republicans voting against honoring the Capitol Police for saving their butts during the insurrection attempt on 1-6, to the idea that Gosar today is out there saying Ashley Babbitt was murdered or targeted by a police officer when she tried to storm the U.S. House, and a security guard saving the Congress people, you know, shot her, as she was trying to invade the Capitol building. You have this very vocal, very small Republican pro 1-6 group who clearly are trying to desperately rewrite history, change history, present it in a different light. You also have these attempts to still try to prop up Trump. I mean, there's the laughable event they had over in Wisconsin here with Mike Lindell and, you know, 1,000 people show up. I mean, that's county fair headline act night. There's no one there. And yet they want this to be something more than what it is. The Arizona recount is a joke. I mean, it's clearly that the entire election process is being compromised down there, probably for profit margins, too, I should imagine. But you've got this element out there, and I think what you're getting is people are finally saying, no, we are going to investigate this. We are going to put this forth. We are not going to take this lightly, because if we don't, we are only asking for this to become worse. And there have been cases in history of America where there have been these insurrections where the Whiskey Rebellion and stuff like that, where people, if they don't smack back on that and they take and hold people accountable, it can become worse, a.k.a. something like the Civil War with the Confederates. So I think that's what you're looking at. I think when the White House put that out, I think this is starting to become a much more concerted, coordinated effort to say, okay, your clown show is over. We don't care that there are sitting Congress people and senators who might be compromised here. The reality is our government almost fell on 1-6, as close as that got, and that was scary. We are not going to tolerate this, and I think that's where they're going from here.
The key to me on this is security, and why is it that the Capitol Police Force was not able to either anticipate or guard against this, given the fact that a decade ago, a plane was headed for the Capitol building, all right? I mean, on 9/11, right? So how is it that systemically we either didn't share information, we didn't have a robust enough police force, we didn't – I mean, I
can tell you a little bit – If I may jump in, when Black Lives Matter was going to have a protest there, the White House took over, basically brought out every freaking military person they could and coordinated a response, because Washington, D.C., as not being a state, is a unique judicial setup there. And that comes basically from the White House. Clearly, and this is something that's undeniable at this point, there was a lot of downplaying. The Secretary of Defense was not being active. I mean, it quite literally got to a point where they tried, and frankly, I'm going to be blunt, that White House gave those insurrectionists as much time as they possibly could before they even themselves had to have Trump come out there going, I love you, time to go home, like it's a closing bar. No, it was – they didn't take it seriously because I think that the White House did not want it taken seriously.
Well, again, I love your Trump impression, and I'm going to miss it the next couple of weeks. But the Capitol takes care of itself. And so how the Capitol – and again, this is not finger-pointing. This is what I'm concerned about as a citizen. How is it that the Capitol Police was not able to stop that? Because if they couldn't stop that, then what other things can they potentially not stop? And so that's a real concern because no one should have gotten that close. No officer should have been in harm's way. Nobody should have been hurt. Nobody should have died that day. Is it an intelligence issue? Is it a staffing issue? I think you got to get that figured out because – you have the potential. I mean, I'm concerned about domestic terrorism. I'm concerned about non-domestic terrorism. And so I think, if anything, if this is not taken, Matt, as a wake-up call for what can happen, then we're just being stupid. Then we're just saying, yeah, go work in Washington and take your own lives in your hands. And that's not right. We shouldn't ask that of our public servants.
And you're exactly right, because – and this is why this is so multifaceted, is that it's not just about what did happen, who was involved, what, you know, who was helping to plan it. It's, okay, how do we never have this happen again? And the unfortunate thing I think is you're going to look at is that eventually if the hard target – if it becomes too much of a hard target in the U.S. Capitol, they'll target some state capitol. And that's going to be – I mean that will be just as much as a wake-up call.
And it'll be even worse because arguably the state capitals – are even less prepared because there has traditionally been less of a threat.
Absolutely. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I'm very concerned about Oregon. I'm very concerned about Idaho, if you want to know the truth. Those two particularly at this point. Jeff, once again, I do want to make sure everyone knows books at Next Chapter Books and totallyiowa.com. You and I, we will talk after the 4th of July, okay?
After Independence Day.
After, I'm just saying a date on the calendar. You're the one. The holiday, of course. That's a Sunday. But we wouldn't talk on a Sunday. We'll talk on the Wednesday, okay?
Take care.
You take care. Jeff Stein, once again.